This holiday season, don't miss out on your chance to stock up on your favorite supplements during the Black Friday Cyber Monday sale at my FullScript online supplement dispensary. November 29th through December 3rd, 5 days only, get 10% off and free shipping on my entire inventory of top supplements at drhoffmanstore.com. You stock only the highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere. The very same supplements I prescribe to my patients and take myself. It's the safest and most convenient way to purchase my curated supplements. Buying through FullScript offers fast, free shipping and optional refill reminders via text or email. It's safe, secure, and includes world-class customer service. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for 10% off and free shipping for 5 days only from November 29th through December 3rd. That's drhoffmanstore.com. You've heard me talk for years about the breakthrough health benefits of CBD. Now, our friends at CV Sciences have developed an innovative suite of non-CBD products that mimic CBD's healthful effects. CV Sciences' new Plus Health CBD-free line of gummies and capsules. The Plus Health Clarity gummies are packed with DMAE, lion's mane, and rhodiola designed to boost your cognitive performance, enhance memory, and provide natural energy. You need a little peace and calm? Plus Health's Peace Gummies, soothing blend of L-theanine, lemon balm, and St. John's wort supports serenity and relaxation without the drowsiness. And if you're on a journey towards optimal health, the Reshape capsules are packed with powerful ingredients like berberine and OEA to support metabolic health and help maintain healthy blood sugar levels. For more information and to order, head over to pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman. Use coupon code Hoffman30. For 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for the new Plus Health non-CBD collection. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. A big thrust of the Make America Healthy Again movement is to deal with problems related to the environment. And regardless of whether you are happy with the outcome of our recent presidential election, MAHA is going to be a theme in the coming years. It's been platformed. And a fundamental tenet of Making America Healthy Again is looking at environmental influences that shape disease. Now, in conventional medicine, they do take an environmental history. When a patient comes in, you may ask them if they're a coal miner or if they work in a factory where they might have toxic industrial fumes, or maybe they have a home directly over a Superfund site. That is what passes for an environmental history, but a much deeper dive on environmental potential hazards comes from what we call stateside environmental physicians across the pond in the UK. A different term is used, ecological medicine. Today, we're going to talk to one of the foremost proponents of ecological medicine and a true pioneer in the UK and around the world internationally. Dr. Jenny Goodman. She's a medical doctor, author, lecturer, and broadcaster. She lives in London. Disillusioned with conventional medicine's inability to heal sick people. Her journey was very much like my own. Looking at medicine's failure to inquire about the causes of illness, the root causes, or to do preventive health care. She left the fold of conventional medicine. She was trained in the belly of the beast, but then emerged into a more creative approach to medicine. She's been practicing ecological medicine for 22 years now with a special interest in fertility, preconceptual care, and working with children. And she is the author of two books. A previous book, Staying Alive in Toxic Times, A Seasonal Guide to Lifelong Health. Her most recent book came out this summer. It's a great primer on environmental medicine. Getting Healthy in Toxic Times, An Ecological Doctor's Prescription for Healing Your Body and the Planet, just came out. So it's with great pleasure that I introduce Dr. Jenny Goodman, who comes to us live from the UK, where it is twilight. Here it's early morning. Okay.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Indeed, it's a pleasure. Perhaps provide us with a definition of ecological medicine. What does it comprise and what does it seek to address?
Well, my understanding of it is as follows, really, that it's ecological in two senses. The first sense is that it sees the whole body, the whole human body, as one joined up ecosystem. Now, if you go to your conventional, what we call a GP, general practitioner, I think you call family doctor, and let us say, for example, that you've got wheezing in your lungs, you're breathless, and you've got aching joints, and you've got a rash on your skin, they will simply refer you, respectively, to a respiratory physician and a rheumatologist and then a dermatologist. Now, those three specialists who live and work in their silos, dealing only with the lungs, the joints, the skin, will never speak to each other about this patient. They will never have a conversation. I mean, even if you put them in a room, they wouldn't know what to say. But the ecological approach says, look, something is going wrong in this person's body that is manifesting in problems in their lungs, in their skin, and in their joints. What are the underlying problems? And it's ecological in that sense, because it sees the whole body as one joined up ecosystem, but it's also ecological in an even more profound sense, which it says you cannot separate the human body from planet Earth, the environment in and on which we live. So, you know, here are our bodies, but we're breathing the air. We're drinking the water. We're eating the food which was grown in the soil. So whatever's in the soil, it's on your plate. The good stuff, which is missing, the vitamins and minerals which may be missing after decades of intensive industrial farming that's drained the nutrients out of the soil. And conversely, the pesticides and all the other toxins that we've added to the atmosphere, the soil and the water, are getting into us. So there are two components in practice to ecological medicine: putting the good stuff back in, that's nutritional medicine, and taking the bad stuff out, that is environmental medicine. But we equally have to ask, why is the good stuff missing? Even in people who are eating the right diet, and why is there bad stuff in there in the first place? And my concern, particularly in the new book, was not so much about detox, getting the bad stuff out, but avoiding retox, how to not be contaminated by the pollutants that we've put onto the planet in the first place. Now, some of those solutions are individual, personal, and some of them inevitably are collective and political. We have to stop the pollution at source, because we're poisoning not just the humans, but the animals, the plants, the trees, the birds and the bees as well.
Indeed. So instead of, you know, slicing and dicing and referring people to different specialists, we take an integrative approach, looking at root causes that might result in a multitude of manifestations of symptoms and disease. In the case of your person, let's keep going on that hypothetical person. The person has skin problems, respiratory problems, and joint problems. Give us a little bit of a hint of the type of detective work that you might undertake in a person like that.
So the first detective work is what you rightly call taking an environmental history. What has this person been exposed to? Not just since they were born, but since they were conceived. So what was their mother's health like when they were in utero, when they were in their mother's womb? Where was she working? Was she wearing a lot of perfume? Was she sick? Was she well? Did she have mercury amalgam fillings? You call them silver fillings in her teeth. Because if she did, then mercury from those will have got into the baby, especially if it was the first baby. Because pregnancy acts as a detox. So you ask those kinds of questions. And then you ask in tremendous detail about the person's diet, and not just what they've eaten this week when they knew they were coming to see you. So they maybe got rid of some of the donuts and ate a few more vegetables. But what's their diet been like since early childhood? Were they breastfed or were they bottle fed? Because that makes an enormous difference to people's health right into their 90s. And then I would take a very detailed history about their gut function. because this patient has told you about their lungs and their joints and their skin, but they think that they haven't got constipation or diarrhea or anything wrong with their tummy. But actually, if you ask in detail, it turns out they only empty their bowel twice a week and they think that's normal because it's always been normal for them. They think straining is normal and they think having gut ache when they go to the toilets is normal. All those things. So when you unravel it, the gut is probably at the root of all those other manifestations. And then you do blood tests and ideally fat tests. So you take a fat sample, not just a blood sample. And you discover, for example, that they grew up on a farm that was not remotely an organic farm and that their father was spraying glyphosate or Roundup on all the fields. And in their fat sample, you find that and you find other pesticides or herbicides or insecticide, and you find mercury in their stool. Even though they have no silver fillings in their own teeth, it came from their mum because they were the first child, usually a boy. And then you take a mental health history and you realize this person's probably on the autistic spectrum and they have difficulty socializing as well. And in fact, the wife has been telling them to come and see someone like myself for 5 years, and it's taken this long to persuade them. So you go through the layers of denial. And eventually, when you have got rid of the toxins, the mercury, the pesticides from this person's body, if they're willing to go along with the challenging regime that involves radically changing their diet, so they're cutting out the sugar, they're cutting out the artificial additives, they're strictly eating organic, and this is very challenging. But if you're not eating organic, I'm afraid you're still eating insecticides and herbicides. So they're eating organic, they're eating, I was going to say lots of fruit and vegetables, but actually lots of vegetables and only a small amount of fruit because you don't want too much of a sugar hit. They're eating probably organic free-range meat and fish and eggs, a little bit of dairy, but probably not because of the skin and the joints, which are indications this person may have a dairy allergy. Later on, when you've detoxed them, you can do an elimination and reintroduction diet where they stay off virtually everything for a few days, and then you introduce foods one at a time. So I would start with goat's butter or sheep's cheese, which are unlikely to provoke a reaction, ending up with cow's milk, which is likely to provoke a reaction. The reason for doing it like that is it may not be necessary for this person to give up all dairy products, but maybe it helps a lot if they give up cow's milk, and within weeks, the joints will stop hurting and the rash all over the body will get better. The lungs will take longer. Obviously, if they live on a busy main road and they're breathing in car exhaust, it's going to be very hard to get the lungs better. But, you know, in Chinese medicine, they've known for thousands of years that the gut and the lungs and the skin are all connected. So you've got this person on a really healthy diet. They're having perhaps some avocados, some nuts and seeds, some animal protein, a little bit of whole grains, probably not too much, but no refined grains, no sugar. And only then do you need to start supplementing, right? You've done blood tests and you find that they're desperately low in the B vitamins, which will help the brain function and the sugar metabolism and all the detox enzymes, that they're very low in vitamin D. And if you're low in vitamin D, your joints will hurt. That they're low in magnesium, so their muscles will be tense. And if you relax the muscles, that already takes the strain off those poor joints that were becoming arthritic. So you normalize the magnesium, the B vitamins, the vitamin D. If you're trying to get rid of the mercury, you give them loads of vitamin C, loads of organic vegetable juice that they have to learn to do. It's hard work, but it's wonderful once they get to be doing it. Epsom salts baths to get the magnesium in and for the sulfur to help with detox. What else? Sprouting little seedlings on their window ledge so they've got salad on their windowsill throughout the year. And also colonic hydrotherapy if the person is over 18 is very, very helpful. And saunas. Saunas will help remove both the fat-soluble lipophilic toxic compounds like the pesticides, and they will also help remove the mercury. And you have to do the saunas in a particular way, toweling off the sweat as soon as the sweat breaks. Otherwise, you'll just reabsorb it again because the body doesn't know you're trying to detox. And then you drop the towel in the laundry and you go for a shower. And for mercury, there are other specific things you could use. You could use coriander, which is now called cilantro, and you can use chlorella, and you can use all the sulfur-containing vegetables like onions and garlic and so on. There are very few sensitive people where you can't do this, but if you're detoxing properly, you're not just redistributing the mercury around the body, you're taking it out. Loads and loads of zinc, loads of selenium, some iodine as well. And if you've put those good minerals in and you're using the right herbs, you can take the mercury out. And the icing on the cake, if you'll pardon the bad analogy, is phosphatidylcholine.
Interesting.
If necessary, you'd use intravenously, but you can use it orally as well. It occurs naturally in egg yolk, which is why I tried desperately to get the vegans to at least eat an egg a few times a week, free range and organic, of course. And it's what our cell membranes are largely made of.
Membrane.
For the brain. Wonderful food for the brain. It helps repair damaged neurons, along with vitamin B12, which most people in any kind of trouble need in huge quantities, along with glutathione, IV or orally, for detox. And, you know, you do all that, you get the toxins out, you replace the missing nutrients. And I would say in this person's case, within 6 months, the skin rash will be completely gone. The joints will be improving, but you can improve them further by using anti-inflammatory herbs like curcumin, which is from the herb, the spice turmeric, and also quercetin, and also boswellia. You can take boswellia orally, and in the form of frankincense essential oil, you can put it on the sore joints. So you can do all those first aid things as well. And the lungs will take longer to get better. But the more you can improve the magnesium level, the more the bronchioles, the tubes leading the air to the lungs, which are made of smooth muscle, they will relax if you've got a lot of magnesium in there, as will the small blood vessels, keeping your blood pressure low and healthy. That's off the top of my head.
Well, that's a very comprehensive answer, but it sounds exhausting. Why not just go to the NHS, I guess they call them the surgery in the UK? Paradoxically, it's not about them operating on you, but surgery is where doctors hang out.
You say office, don't you? You talk about the doctor.
Exactly. So what does NHS have to offer? Like some kind of respiratory drug, some kind of inhaled respiratory drug. Now they have immunosuppressant drugs for asthma. They also have immunosuppressant drugs for skin disorders, like things like, we call it Dupixent over here. And then for arthritis, we also have, you know, powerful immunosuppressive drugs. So, hey, that sounds a lot easier than all these things that you reeled off. What's the downside of that mainstream approach?
It is initially easier until 5-10 years down the line, you're dealing with so many side effects from those drugs that your doctor will not connect with the side effects. You will end up with what we call polypharmacy.
Right.
Many older patients come and they're on 9 or 10 different drugs. And before I do anything, I send them back to their family doctor and say, can you ask your doctor to simply review your drugs? Do you need all of them? Oh, no, that one was given you 10 years ago for X. You don't need that anymore. And then we'll be...
It's called deprescribing. It's actually an art, the art of deprescribing.
That's right. But unfortunately, very few doctors over here in the NHS, God bless, actually do it unless they are specifically asked. And when they do take people off drugs that they've been on needlessly for decades, they never say sorry. They just say, okay, you don't need that anymore. But then the damage is done. Now, the basic philosophy is mechanistic. So when you go to the respiratory physician with your shortness of breath, they say, well, let's give you a bronchodilator to inhale that will expand the bronchioles. It will expand the bronchial tubes, but then without it, they'll just seize up again because they're lacking in magnesium or because they're reacting allergically to dairy or sugar or some toxin, something else that's getting into your system. And similarly with the skin, you can suppress the immune system with steroids, but you need to ask the question, and the same if the immune system's attacking the joints, let's not just zap the immune system with steroids to stop it doing this bad thing, but let's ask why the immune system is doing it in the first place. Because my understanding of the immune system is it's immensely clever. It has kept us alive for millions and millions of years. And how it does this is by knowing the difference between self and other. If it detects a protein in the body that doesn't look right, it thinks, oh, this is not self. So this must be an invading bacterium. I'm going to destroy it. That's what the white cells of the immune system do. They're very clever. But if you're contaminated with a heavy metal like mercury or aluminium, which you call aluminum, or lead or nickel or cadmium, what those metals do is they distort protein structure. So the protein does end up the wrong shape and looking alien to the patrolling cells of the immune system. So they say, well, I'm going to eat this up. This isn't right. This isn't self-protein. So your joints and your skin start getting eaten up, or the myelin sheath in the case of multiple sclerosis, or the cells of the thyroid in the case of Hashimoto's disease, autoimmune thyroiditis. Right, the immune system cells are just doing their job. They're destroying protein that looks abnormal. So rather than zapping the immune system, which will render it also unable to do its proper job of fighting off infection and devouring cancer cells, why don't we just step back and say, if we unpoison this person, their protein structures will normalize and the immune system will no longer be triggered to consume their own tissues.
Indeed. And which leads us to another question, which is, you know, rather than unravel all these various complicated sources of toxicity, why not go back to the inception, the preconceptual period? And that seems to be a favorite area for you personally, because you work with the issue of fertility. Now, fertility is a big problem. We're seeing decreases in sperm motility. We're seeing increasing fertility on the female side, more and more people having difficulty conceiving. They're waiting longer, which is another issue in itself. But there's something going on here that's undermining the fertility of folks. But it seems like there's a dual opportunity here. One, enhance fertility, but also ensure the viability of the offspring, a reduction in the potential toxic burden that they'll have to overcome, even if they're emerging into a toxic world. So could you speak to your work in the area of preconceptual planning and fertility?
Absolutely. I love doing preconception care because it is the ultimate preventive medicine. And what we're dealing with is not just falling fertility, right? Fertility is falling among humans, among animals, among deer, among fish. You know, sperm counts are falling all over the animal kingdom. But it's not just quantity, it's quality. So it is not just that people are having difficulty getting pregnant. They're also having difficulty holding on to a pregnancy, right? Loads and loads of miscarriages, especially with people with high exposure to electromagnetic radiation from their phones and Wi-Fi and so on, but also from chemical toxin. But also a lot of children being born with birth defect. There's no way around this. A lot of children being born prematurely, very prematurely, which decreases their chance of life, but it also decreases their chance of living a fully functional life. There's an awful lot of kids who are damaged because of prematurity. Now, this is partly environmental toxicity, but I think it is also simple magnesium deficiency, because the muscles that are meant to contract and go into spasm after 9 months will do so sooner if you've got magnesium deficiency. And some obstetricians do actually give intravenous magnesium at the last minute,
right,
to bring their terribly high blood pressure. But it would be so much better to make sure the magnesium level was good in the first place.
I learned that from watching Downton Abbey, because there was one of the daughters who died tragically due to preeclampsia. And I was just shouting at them, like, give her some intravenous magnesium. But they hadn't, I think they discovered that a few years after Downton Abbey. So it was a historical.
But even then, you know, giving it as heroic last minute emergency medicine is not as good as making sure magnesium levels are good in the first place. Yeah, there's a vicious circle with magnesium deficiency because we do pee out magnesium. We lose it in the urine when we're stressed.
Yeah.
It's an evolutionary glitch. And then, of course, if you feel stressed, you tense your muscles. And then you feel stressed, so you lose more magnesium. So you do need massage, relaxation therapy, meditation, as well as magnesium supplements, Epsom salts baths, and lots of green leafy vegetables, cooked rather than raw. I mean, we need both, but raw,
more bioavailable
phytonutrients.
Yep.
Cooked, see the minerals.
Indeed. All right, great stuff.
Both.
In terms of preconceptual planning, maybe a checklist of things that moms should be looking at.
Yes. Okay. So I always check vitamin D, vitamin E, essential fatty acids, omega-3 and omega-6, and the minerals, iron, zinc, selenium, magnesium, chromium and manganese, which we need in tiny amounts, and iodine, which always gets forgotten, and it's so important. So I check all those in the woman and in the man. I don't do preconception care with a heterosexual woman unless her partner will come along, because infertility is 50 to 60% male factor.
Right.
And can investigate the quality of the sperm far more easily than you can the quality of the egg. And it is surprising how often there is nothing wrong with a woman and the guy has got a very low sperm count that our national health system says, well, it's a bit borderline, but it only takes one. Now, this is complete nonsense. I mean, it takes billions to find the winner.
Yeah.
And basically, it is so easy to normalize a very low sperm count. You do the same blood test for the man, but almost invariably what I find he needs is he needs to stop drinking beer because sperm are extremely small and they don't like being pickled. He needs to stop smoking if he's smoking. He needs to stop living on sugar and donuts and crisps. He needs to eat lots of healthy vegetables. And he needs to supplement the nutrients which are invariably missing. And the B vitamins are always missing if he's been drinking beer. So, B, C, D, E, all the minerals, all the essential fatty acids. And it takes 4 months, because it takes 3.5 to 4 months for sperm to be fully mature.
The life cycle.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you give the supplements for that length of time and then you repeat the sperm test, it has normalized. And of course, our tests are very crude. They more or less just look at quantity, but it reflects quality. So we're looking not just at how many sperm there are. Can they swim? Can they swim in the right direction?
Viability, yeah.
And how many of them are normal forms? If 90% of them have got two heads, you've still got a problem. And this worries me about IVF. Because particularly when it's done with, IUI, not intrauterine insemination, but where they actually take the sperm and inject it directly into the egg.
Mm-hmm.
Because my feeling is any sperm that's going to make a healthy baby is going to be able to swim.
Yep.
And it is the equivalent, we know, of swimming the Atlantic in treacle.
Mm-hmm.
But the sperm that can do that is going to make a healthy baby. The sperm that can't do that and has to be injected all the way into the egg, it worries me. So yes, while I'm working with couples who are trying to get pregnant, I'm not just trying to help them get pregnant. I'm trying to make sure they have a healthy baby. And then we talk about breastfeeding. And by the time the baby's born, this family already know how to eat healthily. And you've helped the health of all the members of that family for the rest of their lives. And we talk about breastfeeding. And we talk about the science of breastfeeding before the baby's born. And we talk about all the practical helping measures you can use if you have problems breastfeeding. And we do all that before the baby's born, because once the baby's born, your brain does turn to mush. I am a very strong feminist, but it is true that your brain turns to mush when you have a baby. So you learn all about breastfeeding before you have a baby. So does your partner, so he or she can support you through that process. And again, I believe passionately in socialized medicine. I love the NHS, God bless. But just as the doctors are in silos, so are the midwives, and they have lost all those ancient skills of supporting breastfeeding.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work the first couple of times, they say, well, you better put the baby on a bottle. And then the baby is being given formula, which in effect is a drug, should be reserved only for emergencies. And in the old days, you had your mum, your sister, your cousin, your aunt, everybody supporting you to breastfeed, which is a full-time occupation. And for some women, it's easy, for some women, it's not. But to be unable to breastfeed is very, very rare indeed. But you need the support. And then your baby's health is going to be infinitely better for the rest of their life.
Indeed.
And so it's the mum's health.
It's a very comprehensive picture. And I have to say, it's among the more gratifying aspects of my practice is I recall helping a couple to conceive. And, you know, we went through a routine very similar to what you have just laid out. And ultimately, they had a healthy child. And then they let me know that they christened the child with the middle name Hoffman. And I felt bad for the kid because that's kind of a weird middle name to have. But ultimately, the mom came back, it was about 17 years later, and brought this poor child who was saddled with the middle name Hoffman after years of attempts at conceiving. The child was finally born, and they also have a younger sister. So
it is deeply gratifying. I would say one other thing, though, because a lot of people come to me trying to conceive a second child who didn't have any difficulty the first time. And these are usually conscientious moms who have breastfed, and it does deplete your nutrients. And in the wild, if we were still living tribally in the forest, I believe we would instinctively know what plants to go for, what parts of the animal to eat to replenish that which needed replenishing. But I find invariably after the first baby, you need to top up all the vitamins and minerals and essential fatty acids, and then they get pregnant again, because it is a depleting process having a baby.
Just as there's kind of a dump of toxins potentially into the baby, there's also a prioritization for the baby's sake of the critical nutrients that mom may be skimpy in, and the mom may be left quite depleted. And, you know, then what results? Postpartum syndrome, you know, postpartum depression and all that.
So you have to make sure that the woman is detoxed before she tries to get pregnant.
That's, I think, an important thing to do.
Otherwise, the placenta will do the detoxing.
Right. Yeah.
Mum was marvelous, but the toxins will go into the baby. So you detox first.
So you may want to actually really do it as a premeditated thing, is if you're considering pregnancy, maybe undertake a program of preconceptual planning a year or two before event. You know,
Nevertheless, the reality is 90% of people are caused by accidents. And, you know, so
it is what it is.
Is the ideal. But, you know, can still work with people at any stage.
Indeed. Okay, great stuff. You've laid the groundwork for a discussion in part two. Wherein, I would like you to take us on a house tour. You know, there's a series, This Old House. You know, maybe we can redub our house tour, This Toxic House. We can go room to room and talk about some of the challenges as you did in your book. Your book is great, Getting Healthy in Toxic Times. There's an entire chapter devoted to a tour of your house, and we'll do a mini tour when we return. Our guest is Dr. Jenny Goodman. She's a pioneer in the field of ecological medicine. She's an author, lecturer, and broadcaster. She lives in London, and she's gracing us with her presence today on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.